tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I'm your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we are speaking with Dr. Christine Monroe as well as Rhonda Schaefer. They are both from Spay-Neuter Northwest. Dr. Monroe is a graduate of Michigan State University College of Veterinary Medicine and has been a practicing veterinarian for 31 years. Currently, Dr. Monroe owns and operates Spay-Neuter Northwest, SNNW, in Ferndale, Washington. SNNW is a Spay-Neuter exclusive clinic that provides quality, affordable Spay-Neuter services for dogs, domestic cats, and feral community cats. Dr. Monroe and her assistant trapper, Rhonda Schaefer, also pioneered the Rescue Pet Vet TNR program in May of 2021 and the Feral 25 program in February of 2023. Spay-Neuter Northwest, along with its feral cat programs, proudly provides Whatcom County and its residents unique opportunities for all-inclusive professional start-to-finish feral cat services. This dedicated two-woman team has provided compassionate, humane TNR spay-neuter services to approximately 3,500 feral cats, with most of their feral cat work being done above and beyond their standard work week. Spay-Neuter Northwest, Dr. Monroe and her team work collaboratively with local rescue organizations and the local Humane Society to help educate the public about their services, provide spay-neuter assistance vouchers, and to offer financial assistance towards their feral cat programs. Lastly, from their work with feral cat colonies, Dr. Monroe and Rhonda developed the Rescue Pet Vet Foster Kitten Program, which fosters and adopts into Forever Home socialized feral kittens, kittens from their last litter program, and rescue transfer kittens. Their feral models are helping feral cats one colony at a time, helping reduce feral cat overpopulation, and helping improve the lives of feral cats. And I think there's a new one, Dr. Monroe, called No Excuses.
That's correct.
So welcome both of you to the show. Dr. Monroe, first and foremost, please tell us, why did you get so passionate about cats?
My passion for cats in general, of course, has been lifelong. I've always wanted to be a veterinarian. But when it narrowed down to specifically feral cats, was a little later in my career. After I had retired, what I call retiring from private practice, I started a mobile service, veterinary service that provided services for nonprofit organizations only. That said, through those services, I started filtering in feral cats. I had never worked on feral cats. I figured it out. I headed it up, and I found this passion deep within. Rhonda and I call it our soul ping. These feral cats just ignited something in me that started a passion. Amazingly enough, no other veterinarians wanted to deal with feral cats, so that left what I considered me. So I shouldered it. I headed it up, and from there in 2019, decided that, you know what, I feel like I can do a better job at this. So my relationship with Rhonda, we decided to head up a feral cat program on our own, and I bought a van that we could transport the cat. I had the mobile clinic, which at that time was pretty much parked at my place of residence because of COVID. And we started a plan that started over breakfast at my home. And I think we were writing things on napkins, scratch pieces of paper, and so on. And from that, we started a program that has developed into a two-woman team that's 3,500 feral cats. This, and when I say two-woman, I mean two-woman. It's just us. Our largest colony to date is 88 cats. I did 60-some cats when I was sick with COVID because I certainly wasn't going to tell Rhonda to release them all. I figured it out. I did it. I blazed the trail. That said, that's what ignited my passion. And from there, I figured out very quickly that there is a lot of programs for help, but not much help towards feral cats specifically. Since I'm not a nonprofit, that really put handcuffs on me because I was providing services up and above what nonprofits were for cheaper prices, but I couldn't get any assistance. So a lot of this was coming out of my own pocket. And fast forward to today, I feel like we are educating. We are now starting to receive help. We're starting to have people understand that don't be so complacent with calling it kitten season. We can do something about this. Let's head up the problem and let's put money towards what I consider a big source of the problem. And you will see reduction of kitten numbers into the shelter, into our current rescues, and start solving the problem instead of just heading on what we are seeing, you know, the kitten with goopy eyes or, you know, things of that nature. So I'm really trying, along with Rhonda, to start. I always say start is like an onion. You start at the center and you can peel the layers. And let's start in our own in Whatcom County. And once we get this county, what I consider under control, then maybe we can open up to the next county, to the state, you know, and so on. But I feel we have made a mark here locally and we want to continue. And we have now started seeing the progress of that because the uptick in calls and communication through email for feral help is increasing. Rhonda, do you have anything to add?
That was great. I would say my passion has always been within me. I've always been an animal lover, always had cats. We were just talking yesterday about how I was working for a previous organization, started out as a volunteer, and somehow started doing their feral cat trapping. And at that, in that organization that was developed for stay and neuter support for community members, feral cats were just tucked in when the schedule was open to them. So basically a third arm program. I'm incredibly grateful that, quote unquote, just have Rhonda do it. The feral cats was dumped in my basket, so to speak, because it, like Dr. Monroe alluded to, a soul ping that I didn't knew existed within me. And today I am incredibly proud of the work that we have done and the igniting that is happening for people individually, groups in our community, and especially everybody collectively for the feral cats. I often refer to feral cats as choiceless and voiceless, doing what they do best and wired to survive and thrive. And they do that amazingly well. And the essence behind education and people collaborating and understanding how to be effective in a solution without carrying the entire responsibility on their own is something that we are really proud of in the development and evolution of programs and opportunity within our clinic. And Dr. Monroe is right. We were having breakfast and thought, and it was just ding, ding, ding. We can do this. We are doing this, but we did it from a smaller scale to a much larger scale. And the ceiling is not even evident anywhere close to us. And so very incredibly proud of the work that we've done and doing and the people that are behind us and with us in making it better for feral cats.
That's great. I can't tell you how many times I hear that an initiative is started around a kitchen table. I think there's something about like coffee,
exactly,
kitchen, food, and brain cells. I don't know, but there are many stories out there about nonprofits that have started, but like, oh, well, we were just sitting in the kitchen and we were talking and this is where we got to it. So not to belittle the strategic thought, because it's incredible the amount of awareness and the thoughtfulness that went into thinking about this model. Maybe it exists somewhere else in the country, but I'm not aware of it at such a significant level, you know, 3,500 cats. And so I'm very familiar with the mobile clinic model, but it usually starts with, you know, a team of people just making their appointments to bring the feral cats in. But it sounds like, Rhonda, you are, as a technician, more involved in that TNR part. You're out there actually trapping the cats, or are you coordinating with nonprofits and developing relationships with those TNR groups to say, you know, we're going to do 40 ferals and each group is going to bring 10. Are you more of an organizer, or are you actually tactically hands-on?
I would like to say that I am an organizer, but I'm not very organized. So I can tell you that the bulk of my experience has been hands-on trapping. Dr. Monroe and I often say, and I would say very proud, soul-warming of, we say, a trapper and a vet, you bet. And that is inclusive of another analogy that Dr. Monroe says, start to finish. And there has to be great plans in understanding the process. And trapping a cat without, we also say ABC, appointment before containment. Trapping a feral cat without a scheduled appointment is, well, I would say cruel. At any rate, yes, I have done trapping. I absolutely love it. It's at times indescribable. Dr. Monroe alluded to the largest colony that we have trapped. I was trapping, and oftentimes, as you are probably aware, people might guess at the number of feral cats they predict that they have seen or have to need to be trapped. That always has been a much larger number for us. And so the largest colony that I have trapped, and Dr. Monroe is, it is such a well-oiled machine surgery. I mean, she is a powerhouse veterinarian, 88 cats, 88 feral cats, and the numbers decrease. Some are smaller, some are larger. So yes, most definitely hands-on trapping. We have a lot of our, we have our own equipment. Another part of the under the no excuses umbrella is people can rent our equipment for a small colony trapping of their own, caretaker, trap and transport. So I love it. And I am incredibly grateful to say that I have trapped cats because I understand the process. And it makes it so much easier to share and invite people in and help them understand that it is truly a process and a gift.
Oh, that's fantastic. So I'm going to try and take the path of a trapped cat. So you're out in the field, Rhonda, you're out trapping that group of cats. Hopefully you're doing probably a mass trapping, trying to get, you know, one colony, get it done, and then go to the next one with monitoring, always having to monitor our colonies in the back to make sure if they're newcomers, that there's a plan in place for that after situation that we hope never happens, but definitely happens. You've got cats trapped, you're bringing them into the clinic, you've got your transport van, they come into the clinic, you have a mobile spay neuter clinic. So what I'm envisioning, Dr. Monroe, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, I'm very familiar with the RV style spay neuter clinic that's made by a variety of different organizations where it has like 30 cages in the mobile unit and the surgical suite is in that mobile unit. Is that the type of environment that you're working in?
Mine is more of a full service veterinary trailer. It's smaller scale. It's got one surgical table, one tech table. It's got a dental unit and so on. So it's, you know, kind of the same, but just scaled down. Okay. Because the initial intent of the trailer was not mass spay neuter feral. It was more for spay and neuter and medical care. And so things evolve and I'm not afraid to evolve and choose a path. So that is that, just same, but scaled down.
My big question with any type of those surgical environments is always, you know, how to deal with the volume of the traps coming into the clinic and managing them in that clinic space. And then how do you handle recovery after the fact? So would you be willing to talk about what your process is there?
Absolutely. So typically with the larger colonies, we do phases, say over a weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And it may be in waves. But the first wave, I have property and I have a dedicated horse stall with table set that we would put cats in. Sometimes, if depending on the weather, we would just leave the traps in the van and pull the van up right adjacent to bring them in. What I have learned is take a overview of the cats and anyone that looks like it's a very, very, very pregnant female, that goes first. I learned that day one. So kind of do the overview and then we bring X amount of traps into the trailer and then I start the process. Once surgery is done, they go in, they stay until they are awake, not necessarily fully recovered. Once they're awake, they either go back into the van, dependent on weather. And then we keep them overnight. So in addition, we are the caretakers. They go back to the dedicated stall. And once they're awake, they are given food and then they stay there overnight. Sometimes if it's, again, a big colony and we don't want to release before we have them all, we will keep every single one of them. We will change out their pads, you know, and give them breakfast and dinner and so on.
And are you ear tipping them on the right ear or the left ear? And are you tattooing on the belly at all?
For the female cats, I do tattoo. And yes, I do ear tip. I ear tip the left. When I first started, I was instructed, and I can't even remember who instructed me. It was somebody involved in it, in the feral cats, instructed the right. Then I quickly realized that the majority of folks were doing the left. So I switched to the left. And I'm going to tell you what, I know it's just an ear tip, but I really take pride in that ear tip. I take a lot of pride in that ear tip, you know, so absolutely. And kind of things that I've learned too is black cats, I take a little bit more of an ear tip because they're harder to see at a distance to really see the ear tip. So, you know, some of this stuff, I love to hear pearls of other people, but some things you just kind of figure out by yourself in doing it. And it's kind of a great feeling. It's a real beauty to say, nope, you know what? I can see this now. I'm going to do this a little different to make it a little easier next time. So we just kind of learn as we go and develop our own, kind of as my son would always say, Mom, just blaze your own trail. And that's what we've done. It may not be exactly like somebody else does, but everything is done with a purpose and a why, and I'm certainly never opposed to change or doing something that may be an improvement or, you know, something of that sort.
Mark your calendar. It's happening this Saturday. Join us this Saturday to learn the art of trap, neuter, return, a powerful way to transform the lives of community cats. Brought to you by Community Cats Podcast and Neighborhood Cats. This session is for anyone who wants to turn their passion for cats into action. Whether you're a seasoned caretaker or just starting out, there's something for everyone to learn. Don't wait. Reserve your spot now at communitycatspodcast.com/get TNR certified. Tomahawk Live Trap exceeds customers' expectations by providing them with the highest quality humane animal control products available. Check out their new Pro Series Gravity Door Trap. They feature a door that sets automatically when you open it. No hook or plate setting needed. Use discount code KEEPITHUMANE for 10% off your order at livetrap.com. In a recent study, 97% of respondents said that pets are family. Communities can play a vital role in helping to keep families together. Whether it's reuniting lost pets with their owners, donating pet supplies or funds for pet owners in need, or offering short or long-term fostering, people can help keep pets and their people together. We just have to show them how. Did you know there are resources you can use to help bring attention to the programs you offer to help them do just that? From public service announcements, short videos, printable posters, online and social graphics, and much more. Find your resources at www.petsandpeopletogether.org/campaign-resources. Hashtag be a helper.
Are you passionate about making spay-neuter services more accessible? Join us for the 2024 United Spay Alliance online conference on October 12th and 13th, hosted by the Community Cats Podcast and the United Spay Alliance. This two-day virtual event brings together animal welfare experts offering presentations on starting low-cost spay-neuter programs, fundraising, community outreach, and more. Learn what's working from professionals and volunteers and get inspired with new strategies to help control the cat population. Register today at communitycatspodcast.com/spayallday and be part of the change.
In addition to the hat that I wear here at the Community Cats Podcast, I'm also the interim executive director at the United Spay Alliance, which really strongly promotes high quality, high volume spay neuter techniques. Most of those techniques are focused on a clinical setting with regards to owned cats. How do, and I'm making assumption here, that you follow high quality, high volume spay neuter techniques. You were trained somehow, some way, and I'd love to hear how you were trained in the process, whether it was on your own or just by learning, watching, seeing, creating your own style, or if you were officially trained in some way. But also, how does dealing with feral cats, does that really impact the process, or is it still pretty much the same in the tools that are used in the high quality, high volume spay neuter, Dr. Monroe?
I was never officially trained high quality, high volume per se. My spay neuter surgical skills started out in private practice, But the way I really got into opening my eyes to a different sector is I was involved with the local Humane Society, Whatcom Humane Society. I walked in one day because they asked, could you please help? This was 1999. And I walked in and I literally went, oh my gosh, they need help. I can't not help. I had never been exposed to Humane Society, anything at that point. I was young in my career. So through there, my surgical skills improved, incisions became smaller, things of that nature. So I would say I'm very efficient at my surgical skills, keeping in mind that I've never held a job where I just stand at the surgery table and the technicians just replace the animal, right? So I couldn't even tell you what I could do in that setting, but I can tell you that I can do 88 animals on by myself and with Rhonda's assistance. Again, she's got another sector too she's doing. So some of it, I do the surgery with the two of us or just myself, being the eyes and the ears and administering the injection and everything else. So, you know, you evolve and deal with what is given to you. Then a couple of years ago now, I actually tuned into, I want to say, one of the Humane Society, the large Humane Society sites, and actually watched some videos of what they recommend. And I was like, okay, I'm pretty much already doing that. But I did take home a few little pearls. I'm like, how did I never think of that? And so, you know, there were some things there. A, it made me feel great that I was already doing this. And I left with two new techniques that I was like, all right, this does make it a little bit easier. I like this. And it gave assurance to that, okay, I'm doing just fine.
Yeah, no, and I think that's excellent. I really appreciate the fact that as we continue to grow and get to know more people, that trying to connect veterinarians like yourself and technicians like Rhonda with other like-minded folks across the country. There are several other mobile programs that work in a little bit of a different way, but yet at the end of the day, they're still, the ultimate goal is to reduce the overpopulation situation that is out there. I want to make sure I cover one thing because you are both extremely strategic oriented thinkers and very thoughtful. And I want to ask one question before we move on to the foster kitten program, which I also want to make sure we cover today. You know, your measures of success. So you were talking about that there was more awareness of your program for feral cat colonies. So does that mean your demand is higher? I'm assuming, Rhonda, you may answer the phone a fair amount of the time. I'm making an assumption here, but Rhonda, is the demand for services higher? What are your measures for success for the county? For then you can say, okay, now we can think about moving someplace else.
Before Rhonda answers, Stacey, I would like to just interject because this will make it a little bit clearer of what we are faced with today or experiencing. When we first started, one of the rescue groups that I was providing services for, their group really was established at that point. And she, the director of that group, was really passionate also about feral cats. So she directed a lot of quote unquote business, I guess you could say, our way. At that point in time, it was more large colonies. So, you know, 66, 40, 35, 25, you know, large colonies. So once we started completing and we literally were closing colonies. Like we went out and we counted 88 cats and we did 88 cats. So we were closing colonies. That was 2021. Now, fast forward to 2024. What I saw occurring over the years was, or over the short number of years, was that the request for large colonies was decreasing as the request for smaller amounts of cats and singles, doubles, maybe five was increasing. Well, for me in a business model and what we're doing, that was really not efficient for us to go out and do full service. So I'm always thinking like, okay, here's this demand. How can we reach this demand with our current model? Well, we can't. So how about something called caretaker trap and transport? We show you how to fish, basically. So we would rent out traps, provide instructions, then give when to start acclimating, when to trap, when to meet us at a meeting point. We get the 8 cats done, then we meet back, etc. So fast forward now to spay neuter Northwest, the influx of communication is really more of the demand of those, what we call smaller demands, but more volume of the smaller demands. Now I'll revert it to Rhonda.
Thank you. So the evolution itself of not only our initial onset of services for feral cats at the time, we're recognizing while I had come from a place of trapping a small number of feral cats at a time, Dr. Monroe is very profound and well-known and highly regarded and respected as a private veterinarian, her influence and help at the Humane Society rescue groups. So in this community, she is a pulse point for animal welfare and care and extraordinary service. I myself has had a lot of experience and time volunteering for different groups and organizations. So when we came together, I would say there was okay, it's going to be all right. And with that cheer and support, the evolution of different opportunities to support our community and the cats within, and understanding that if we take things back and look from where it's coming from, it is bringing the people that feel really stuck at 1 or 2 or 10 cats. Oh no, now there's 15 cats. Oh, another litter of kittens, to reach out. And so what is happening is the word of mouth, the understanding that we're together, we're still collaborative, the opportunity for services and help exists, there are resources, and then meeting them and how to support that and get people to be involved in the solution. And we all know that a colony of 88 cats starts from a colony of 2 cats. And if people will speak up and accept the understanding, it's far easier to do 2 or 5 or even 10. There's no excuses or need to wait until it's 88 or 20. And for that reason, I believe that while the idea and the goal is spay and neuter and reducing, oftentimes we say feral overpopulation, but feral population just in general.
Correct.
Comes from a place of collaborating, and just at the same time, there's always 2 or 3 lanes moving at once: education, connection, collaborating, and letting people know that we're here, but we need help. Everybody has to have quote unquote skin in the game in this community, teaching so many people how to fish, if you will, all these great analogies. Is in the long term the best solution.
For sure. And what your metrics are actually showing you based on the calls, and this happened at Alley Cat Advocates in Louisville, Kentucky, with their spay neuter program, which is only for feral cats, you know, those large colonies. Now they are at that, getting that the 1 to 2 to 3 sort of little points on the map. And you're dealing more with the general public rather than an organizational connection. And 80% of the people who attend our TNR certification workshops that we have on a monthly basis here at the podcast are individuals. They're individuals who are just trying to help a couple of cats in their backyard. They're not out there to be a star in the animal welfare space. They just want to help the cats in their backyard. And so that is their why. And now we're having to pivot or adjust our programs to fit that model versus the, okay, we're going to go in and we're going to deal with this 80 cat colony situation here. Before we run out of time, I want to make sure that, and Rhonda, maybe you want to address this, the Rescue Pet Vet Foster Kitten Program. Would you like to share what that's all about?
If I may, Dr. Monroe alluded to how when we have large colonies come in, take a sneak peek and check. And oftentimes the physical presence of a feral kitty holding themselves up, it's hard to see at just a glance what we have trapped. May of 21 is when we started our feral cat TNR program. We were at Dr. Monroe's residence, and it was a gorgeous May day, our first colony, and we had trapped kitties. And the colony placement, their home was not too far from Dr. Monroe's. So there was some traveling back and forth. And when it was time to start surgery was when we realized that a feral mom had given birth in her trap to 4 wiggly little darling kittens. And we thought, oh boy. And then we realized, well, what do we do? So it was a previous TNR client, agreed to foster that mom and her kittens. She had a very private space to keep them together because you trap the kitty to spay her, but you can't spay her. You don't want to turn her loose. And there was four more kittens in the colony, right? So that turned out to be a situation where those kittens were eventually socialized and adopted out into domestic homes. And that mom cat was adopted by that family and she continued to live. She did receive an ear tip and lived outside. Meanwhile, on that same property, a litter of kittens had emerged from under a shed. And they were, so we thought, well, here we go. Now I guess we're going to start a foster program. So those five kittens came to live with me. I still have one of them today. And I would tell you that while morphing feral kitties, moving them from feral life to domestic life, the collaboration and the people that we meet along that process are now people that have either adopted kitties from us, continue to support our program and share word of mouth. And from that, people are calling in and saying, we understand you have a feral cat program. I have two cats. Or right now is a very heightened demand for, I have a mom and kittens. So you probably also have a tomcat. Yes, I've seen one. And that is what I would say right now is between emails and phone calls coming in, it is by far the busiest time, but highest demand. And I would say unequivocally, it is people understanding now that there's a resource right here locally.
Dr. Monroe, if folks are interested in finding out more about your organization, how would they do that? And is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
I would love to share that I, through this evolution of what we have started and where it is today, the other neat thing about my position is I have been in private practice. I've helped start the veterinary program at the Humane Society while working at private practice. I was their veterinarian for 6 years. I work with rescues. I do the TNR. So I've kind of seen, totally different aspects of what we do, animal advocacy. I really, really, really strongly believe we will not spay and neuter ourselves out of the problem. We're just never going to do that. It is human responsibility or irresponsibility of how you want to take a look at that. And there has to be, with everything we do, a little snippet of education that goes along with it. Because if we just, I call it, if we just skim the surface and take in these little kittens, we've improved the lives of those kittens, but we've done nothing of where they came from, why they're there, the male and female that exists. And people really are receptive to the education, and don't assume that people won't spend time and even spend some money towards it, because that is incorrect. Take the time. You don't have to spend a lot of time doing it. But if you have a vested interest in it and say, we can help, this is how we can help, but this is what you're going to have to do, you're going to have success. And you're going to have a person that will say to the next person, hey, you know what? I had a feral cat. Call this organization or do this. They'll rent you a trap. It only costs $25. You will start a communication chain that will eventually help reduce the population, will help improve the lives. And the beauty of what I have in this county is a humane society where I can look at numbers. Every year I can go in and take a look at how many feral cats were relinquished. Guess what? That's going down. Or guess what? Now they can do a working cat program because less are going in. You know, things that people aren't privy to that we can now start seeing the effects of. So that is my thing. There's really no excuses anymore, but we will not spay and neuter ourselves out of it. Let's give that snippet of education, because the education is the lasting part of it. And that will go from person to person.
Right. And I'll add to that, because we used to say we can't adopt our way out of this situation. So there's the second line here, as you're saying, we can't spay neuter our way out of this. With that being said, I can say from back in the day in the 90s, one thing when we did start having affordable, accessible spay neuter programs, we had business cards. We gave those business cards to all the local animal control officers, and they loved us, because they were looked at as the good person in town, because they were able to pass along a resource that then those folks were able to get the assistance that they needed. and it was their animal control officer giving them that information versus giving them a citation or a fine or something like that. So it helped improve the image of the community resource using the local community to feed that information, not coming from an outsider's organization, you know, somebody, oh, that's crazy. They've got a mobile cat mobile that they drive around, those crazy people or whatever. But no, it's coming from the animal control officer in the town, or from even the local veterinarians in town were handing out our business card because somebody would come in, I can't afford that to get my cat spayed or neutered. Oh, well, will you consider this alternative? And they would do the card because the mobile clinic drove around to different towns. And so it's really understanding the needs of your community and at what level they're at, what the culture situation is like there and the economic situation. So there is a certain level of a needs assessment that needs to go on. Also, in understanding your community and how to work, pivoting, you're always pivoting. You are analyzing what's going on in your community and you're changing. And that's what we have to do too with all of our programs to be able to be the most proactive and impactful. And we're turning our passion for cats into action. So Rhonda and Dr. Monroe, I want to thank you so much for being guests on our show today. And I really hope you'll be on again in the future. Folks that are out there listening, please tune in to this podcast again next week. Please consider sharing this podcast with others and don't forget to subscribe.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.